Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Into Punk Classics, a show where we take old episodes of Turned Into Punk that have been lost from the internet and return them to their previous glory by sticking them back on the feed. You can find this podcast on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and all other forms of social media. Well, that's pretty much it. At Turned Into Punk, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at LeftForDamian. I play in a band. More information can be found at fuckedup.cc. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy another TOAP classic. MVP, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This has been you're someone that I've wanted to talk to on this show for a long time, someone I've got to talk to on your show, but this means a lot, man. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. Absolutely flattered.
Well, I got to say, like, I you're one of those people that I think I bought so much in to your on-screen sort of persona at in WWE that I never for a second just let it enter my mind that you could potentially have been a punk rock or hardcore kid. And then to follow you on Twitter and find out that that was the case, I was like, oh my gosh, I want to have you on the show. And as I was telling you off air, you're someone that I respect for so many other reasons, but to find out that you also have the connection to the punk world, it's just too much for me. So
kind words. You flatter me, sir.
Well, let's, go on.
No, I was just going to say that's, people are always surprised by that. And it's understandable because for so long, how old are you now?
36.
Okay. I'm 42. We're not that far apart.
No.
Just until recently, it seems that, you know, music was socially and culturally segregated for so long. Mm-hmm. And just over, like, the last, it seems, 10 or 15 years, has it been a lot more of mainstream crossover. I remember back when, you know, rap sucked and rock sucked and rappers and rockers were against each other. And, you know, fast forward, you got, you know, part of skate culture, kids wearing Pumas with fat laces, you know, doing fucking ollies, listening to Snoop Dogg. You mm-hmm. know, it's like, you know, everything's crisscrossed and everybody's down with everything. And when I was 14, I used to work at this drugstore, not a drug, vitamin store over in North Miami. And this guy named Wes Mitnick.
Oh, but before you get into the story, I want to ask you. I want to get my my shit in and ask you my actual titular.
Okay, sorry, I'm high as fuck, so you got to leave me alone.
No, please.
So
am I.
Massive gravity bong rip. So I'm in the stratosphere. Please. I saved the stratosphere for me and you.
That is the one place that I would most want to be right now. Trust me. You mentioned kind of like briefly your story about kind of first finding out about punk rock, but MVP, how did you get into punk? Do you remember like the first time you ever heard it?
You know, my earliest memory of punk is being in elementary school and reading. I was a precocious kid and I used to read the newspaper. I was one of those latchkey kids. So I'd get home, pick the newspaper up off the porch, go in the house, call my mom, let her know I was home.
Yeah.
And I would actually read a little strip down the side of the paper that was just a bunch of blurbs about what was going on. And the first thing I can remember, my earliest memories, are reading about a band called the Dead Kennedys and how offensive the name was. And I think I was in second or third grade. I just thought, yeah, that's pretty offensive. I was that young, but I understood the offensiveness of the name. And then, you know, somewhere along the way, I'm sure, you know, I just remember seeing footage on TV of you know, Doc Martin boot wearing kids with, you know, safety pins through their lips and whatnot. And, you know, the media's depiction of punk or, mm-hmm. you know, exposés. Hey, this is punk rock. This is a new craze, you know.
So when do you think it was, what was your original reaction to it? Were you like, had you heard the music at this point or no? Was it just sort of like in these sort of scare media pieces that you were seeing?
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with the music at that point. My introduction to the music was actually pretty cool. As I was saying before, there was a guy named Wesley Mitnick, Wes, and he used to hang out with some, and this is before, going back before there was an established quote-unquote colorblind skins in the South Florida area. Mm-hmm. They were pretty much just referred to as American skins. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'd beat up people who talk bad about America, they'd beat up Nazis, and they'd beat up gay people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at 14, I thought that was pretty cool. So, unfortunately, the scene back then wasn't, you know, South Florida didn't have a real popping scene, but my buddy Wes, we used to get off work, and he would want to shoot down to this club called Fire and Ice, because if you got there before 11, you got a stamp, and then you can get in free. Mm-hmm. So Wes was a skin, and at that point, the only thing I knew about skins is that they were Nazis, and they beat up black people. So he was my education to the scene, and, you know, the different, you know, the different types of skins and, you know, what the laces meant. And I'm like, oh, shit, okay, I didn't even realize. And at the time, I was into gang culture in Miami.
Yeah.
So that shit kind of appealed to me anyway. The music, though, riding in Wes's Camaro with him blasting Agnostic Front and MDC and, you know, that took a little getting used to. But Wes did something that was brilliant, and it's kind of funny because at that time, you know, I was into Public Enemy and Eric B. and Rakim, and, you know, I didn't dislike rock, you know, Van Halen kind of stuff I kind of dug, but Wes gave me a cassette tape, and on that cassette tape, one side had Bad Brains, Eye Against Eye, and on the other side had the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Uplift Mofo Party Plan. Mm-hmm. He gave me that cassette tape, and he told me, that band right there, those guys are black. They're dreadlock rosters. I'm like, no shit. These dudes? And I'm like, get the fuck. That tape led me going to a store called Open Records in North Miami Beach on 167th Street, because back then there was no alternative record store. You know, there was no alternative section.
Yeah, it's pre-Nirvana. Kind of
exactly. And I went and I bought Rock for Light. I bought the Roar Sessions. I bought Band of DC. This was my introduction to Bad Brains, and I fell in love.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I was like, oh, shit, I like this. And then, and for me, it was racial.
Yeah.
Without question, it was racial, because these were some dudes that looked like me making some music that I probably wouldn't have listened to if they didn't look like me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that led to me, you know, getting turned on to Fishbone. And of course, at that time, the, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who were, you know, they're this funk sound where they were covering old funk classics and doing it well. Like, okay, this is the music I used to listen to with my father on the weekend. So, you know, I can relate to this. All of a sudden, there was this whole new world of music and culture that was open to me, and I stepped right on through that door.
So I guess back to the Bad Brains, you know, it's like you say it's racial, and you know, obviously I'm not putting words into your mouth or anything, but also I think the thing with the Bad Brains is they are clearly like a head and shoulders above a lot of bands. Like, they are that much better. So it's,
well, that was the thing that was so amazing about them, because they came from a black background of jazz fusion. Mm-hmm. They could play. They could, mm-hmm, really play. They weren't like, you know, your typical hardcore band that, as we were discussing earlier, hey, let's just get together and we'll figure it out as we go.
Yeah.
These guys came into it knowing how to play diminished sevenths and whatever, Mixolydian modes.
So when you got into it at this point, did you go to shows? Like, did you go to concerts at that point, or?
So my buddy Wes, who I was talking about, once I kind of got into the groove.
Oh, sorry. I guess also because we were talking about it off air, where did you meet Wes? Like, where were you working at the time?
Oh, I was working at this vitamin shop at 163rd Street Mall.
Okay.
My buddy Sean worked there, and I used to go, you know, hang out with him, and me and Wes kind of hit it off, and as he was the one that, you know, started teaching me about the punk skin hardcore scene and the culture. So with Wes, once I started working there, as I said, we'd shoot down to Fire and Ice.
Yeah.
So he could get his stamp, and then after that, you know, we'd hang around and drink beers with the Skins, or we would go to the Cameo, which is some swank club on South Beach now, but back then it was still just the Cameo Theater, and that's where a lot of bands would play. And that's where I saw MDC for the first time and went, oh, shit.
Did you ever see, so MDC, was that your first punk band that you saw, or was that just the first one that really spoke to you?
No, that's the first one that I saw.
Wow.
That was my very first show, and I remember just being like, holy shit. Like, I used to, in that time, we used to go to Coconut Grove and get into gang fights.
Yeah.
You know, and that was recreation. Now, don't get me wrong, it was scary, but, you know, that's what we did. And, man, when shit jumped off, I had that same feeling that shit, are we fighting? Like, what the fuck? It's, you know, the immediate adrenaline rush and fight-or-flight panic. And then I was able to settle down and go like, oh, okay. This is what they do. Wow.
So were you kind of like immediately, I guess by this point, were you into MDC? Because you said it took a while to get into the music, but was it more like the live experience that grabbed you at first with them than the record?
Yeah, well, at that time,
yeah,
you know, the music, I was just learning about it. So I couldn't discern one band from the other initially.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just loud and angry, and I could relate to that because, you know, the hip-hop that I was listening to at the time was loud and angry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I started, like, actually listening, reading, you know, the lyrics to, you know, songs from Black Flag, and I'm like, wait a minute. We're kind of talking about some of the same stuff, you know, from just different perspectives. And I guess, you know, the angst spoke to me and I could relate to it. As far as like being into MDC, I wasn't into them at that point. I was only like into Bad Brains.
Yeah.
I was into Bad Brains. And everything else was just starting to come to me. I was just learning about it.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever go to Churchill's? Was that where shows?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I played there.
Did you really?
Yeah, I've still, I think it was like, I don't know if it's still there. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, no, it's still there, man. It's still there. It's, awesome. It's an institution. It's under new ownership, but they kept it the same.
Yeah. We played there, and it was, I guess, God, it must have been 7 years ago now. But it's amazing to go on that stage and realize that that's the thing about, I guess, South Florida is like all those institutions are institutions that have been there. And so when you're stepping on stage at Churchill's, you're stepping on the same stage that like the Eat stepped on and like all these crazy old punk bands played on.
I could go down a list of bands that I saw there if I could remember. like the U.S. Bombs. I saw the U.S. Bombs there. I saw a number of them. But Churchill, someone said this, and I'd never thought it before until I heard it recently. As a matter of fact, just last time I was down in Miami, someone said that Churchill's is Miami's CBGB's.
Yeah, and definitely.
Yes, yeah. That is the perfect. It's a shithole. It's a dive. They serve food there, but I wouldn't eat it. But, man, you're going to get cheap beer. You're going to get a cool ambiance. You're going to get awesome intimacy with live bands. And you're going to get Premier League on the weekends.
Yep. Yeah, you get a taste of England in South Miami.
With the giant double-decker bus right out front.
Giant double-decker bus out front, too. So what were there any local bands that were kind of speaking to you that you saw, or were there any local bands that you even liked at that time?
Not at that time.
Yeah.
Because, oh, wait a minute. No, I'm lying to you. Wait a second. It's funny how all this comes together. You're actually conjuring up memories that I haven't considered in a while.
That's what the show seems to do for people. I'm glad.
Wow. Okay, so when I was 16.
Yeah.
I got arrested for, I caught an armed robbery case and I ended up going to prison. So it seems my window, my introduction and immersion into punk and the hardcore scene, it was immediately just shut off. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I found this new scene. I'm digging the music. I like the style. And I'm seamlessly flowing back and forth between the two, you know, genres, musically and socially. And then I ended up going to prison. And back then, there was no hardcore to be heard on the radio. There was no punk. You know, you're going to get Guns N' Roses and Led Zeppelin, you know, triple shot at 5 o'clock on the afternoon drive.
Yeah.
And that's it. But fortunately, the prison I was at wasn't too far from Tampa, so I used to be able to pick up the occasional college radio station, and I'd get like an injection of shit, you know, and it'd just be like, whoa, I would get goosebumps and I'd be fired up, and that would be it. So it wasn't until the grunge scene came along that I was able to hear anything remotely close to that sound on mainstream radio.
Mm-hmm. So, but were there like bands that you like that before you had to go to prison that you were into?
Oh, yeah. Now, it's funny because there was that's what I was going to say, conjuring up memories.
Yeah.
When I was in prison, I bumped into this guy named Mark, and we were shooting the shit. And again, back then, you know, there weren't a lot of people that I could talk punk and hardcore music with.
Yeah.
Or learn, because like I said, you know, I just had this crash course, and then it all abruptly came to an end. Mark, and I was trying to learn to play the guitar back then. Mark steps into the music room one day, picks up a guitar, and he can play his ass off. We start shooting the shit, and he played for a South Florida band called Foie. And I had seen Foie once, and that was the only local band that I knew of that I know I had seen hanging out with Wes. And
wow.
It just so happened that years later I bumped into their guitar player in prison.
Was it Foie?
Foie, FWA, I'm pretty sure.
Wow. Foie. I've never heard of that band. They were like a hardcore band too, or a punk band?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
I will have to look that band up. But that's, yeah, it's funny because there's been other people here on the show that have come on that had to do time, and they said in their experience it was like, you know, they would pick up the odd college station and hear like a punk song, and it would be like, oh wow, because it would just be so shut off from sort of the day to day life inside.
Yeah, it was completely isolated. And on the rare occasion, I remember I met this one kid who came in, and we hit it off just because he liked thrash, you know.
Yeah.
And again, there was no thrash to be heard on the radio. And I'm like, hey, you ever heard of this band? Oh, yeah, I'm not really into them, but I heard of them. You ever heard of this band? Oh, DRI, yeah, I heard of them. Yeah, yeah, they're all right, you know. So we could at least kind of have that. At least we knew the dialects one another was speaking. But,
yeah.
You know, for the longest time, like I said, at that time, there was no mainstream outlet to hear this music. It wasn't until I had been in prison for about, man, I remember it was past the halfway mark. I was at Glade CI, and there was a station out of Palm Beach. I don't remember the call letters now, but they were like, you know, they would play alternative music. And now that there was a lane and a label for alternative music, then on occasion you'd hear certain bands pop up, or, you know, now there were new bands reigniting an old sound.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially at that point, too, I guess you would have a lot of those bands getting kind of signed up in the post-Green Day, Offspring, Nirvana, kind of like...
Dude, let me tell you this story. You're going to love this story.
Yeah.
And I was at a Glades Correctional work camp, and that station out of Palm Beach that I was talking about, Wednesday, they would have... I forgot what the show was, but... It was like a nationally syndicated show, and they would have a live band in studio.
Mm-hmm.
And by this point, now everybody knows who Gwen Stefani is. She's a mainstream pop queen, and, you know, she ain't no holla back girl. You know? She's worth millions and millions of dollars. But I didn't know what Gwen Stefani looked like yet. Tragic Kingdom was just out. I'm Just a Girl was getting massive radio play. walking in your spider web, like, you know.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen her yet. I didn't even know how hot she was. I just heard the interview with them, and they were talking about some of their influences being Bad Brains.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in love with this voice, this woman who I don't know, or I'm falling in love with this woman, and they do a cover. Yeah, it just blew me away. They did a Bad Brains cover. They did Sailing On.
Yeah, I was going to say Sailing On, right? They used to do that.
They did Sailing On, and she did Dr. No's guitar solo. She scatted. I'm like, I don't know who this woman is. I don't know what she looks like. I am in love with her right now. I give her to me. When I get out of prison, I'm going to find her, and I'm going to marry her, and fuck you, Gavin Rossdale. But what? So I remember that moment, like, Gwen Stefani gave me the gift of Bad Brains.
That's awesome. Like, and it's also, I guess, at that point too. Like, were the Bad Brains on Maverick at that point, or no? Were like they on the radio ever?
Wow, yeah, that was I remember reading about all this,
yeah,
you know, stuff that they were going through when they had to change their name to Soul Brains,
yeah,
and you know that whole deal. So I guess at that point, I think that was around the time Black Dots was released, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that's right. Were you like, where you say you were reading it? Were you getting music magazines inside, or where?
Oh yeah, man! I used to subscribe. I had like, we didn't have access to the internet.
Yeah,
but I had a lot of magazine subscriptions. So I had subscriptions to Rolling Stone, of course, and I think I had Spin, and then a couple of men's magazines like Detail.
Yeah,
and, but then I used to get a couple fanzines too.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm trying to, there was one I used to get from a guy out of Eureka, California. It was called Married Punks. And that one was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Me and that guy used to pen pal a little bit. A guy named Doug. I wonder whatever happened to him. And there were a few others. I can't remember now, but that's kind of how I used to keep up with that stuff.
That's awesome. So how did you get in touch with these zines? Were like the ones you knew about before you went inside?
Absolutely not, dude. It's just as luck would have it, one day I was walking through the day room and there was a pile of magazines and books, and it was just a few pages of a zine. How it got there, who put it there, I'll never know.
Yeah.
But I picked it up and started flipping through it and just wrote away for a couple of the zines that were advertised. And next thing I know, I was on somebody's list and I was getting a few zines every few months or whatever the hell they decided to put them together and put them out. So
that's amazing.
That was pretty cool.
That's an incredible story. Holy. I also, because like in MMR and Maximum Rock and Roll, I remember on the back page you'd always see like in the sort of personal classified ad section, there'd be like, you know, someone writing in being at like, I'm at this facility, please write me, looking for pen pals in prison
yeah,
while I'm inside type thing. But, you know, I guess they weren't fortunate enough to find zines in the day room. That worked out well.
They weren't quite so lucky. So
no. So when you got out of prison, obviously that's when you kind of started your journey onto wrestling, and I think, but did you kind of get back into music right away, or how did
man, in a big way, dude.
What was that like? I'm sorry not to cut you off, but I don't know, what was that like being, because you're obviously so passionate about music, like that really comes across, like what was that like finally getting out and being able to kind of have access to all the stuff you've just been reading about or getting snippets of, or anyway, please go on.
Oh, no, dude, that was one of the first things. There was the woman who used to have the place that I bought all my Bad Brains albums from, she ended up at Blue Note Records down in North Miami Beach. It was like three sections, and her store kind of morphed into the middle section. So when I was at work release, I would, you know, sneak over there sometimes and pop in and pick up a CD or and you know, again, little by little, here I was being able to reimmerse myself in this music. And once I was out completely, I remember the first thing that I did, the first show that I went to was the Warped Tour. And
wow.
I went with my buddy Lindell, mm-hmm. And his buddy Steve, I think his name was, whatever the case. You know, here I was for the first time, and because I did 9.5 years in prison.
Wow, yeah.
So it's been almost a decade, you know, and here I am at a show for the first time, and, you know, I'm 255 pounds. Last time I was in a pit, I was about 140 pounds. You know, I'm just fucking, just all naturally fucking cock-swole, strong. I'm 28, 29 years old. Full of piss and vinegar, and I'm ready to fucking wreak havoc in the pit. And every time I would get in it, just everybody would get out. Yeah. What the fuck, man? Come on. Don't do this to me. And I remember I had on some black cargo shorts, some black Doc Martens, and an Agnostic Front t-shirt. I'm ready. Old school, baby. Let's ride.
At the Warped Tour.
You know, it's funny because these colorblind skins showed up, and all, you know, my spider senses started tingling. My hair stood up on the back of my neck, if you will, and I see these rough, hard-looking dudes. All these guys got black mouthpieces. I'm like, all right, here comes trouble.
Yeah.
But to the contrary, me and those dudes ended up hitting it off right away, and we started kind of hanging out. I'd see them at shows, and I just kind of got accepted into their fold. So when I would show up at shows, that was kind of the crew. This guy Richie ended up in Georgia too. Anyway, that was kind of cool coming out of prison, getting into that. And it was funny because at that Warped Tour, I had read a real cool article about Orange 9mm mm-hmm. and Burn, and a Failure used to come on that Palm Beach radio station that I was talking about.
Oh wow, they got radio play?
Oh yeah, man. They were on whatever that station was in Florida in Palm Beach.
That's awesome.
I used to hear that. Yeah. You're such a failure.
Yeah.
Why you got to play? Oh man, I'd love the song. So
that's awesome. No, I because I remember they were on the major label and stuff, but I guess in Canada we didn't really get them on the radio that much at all. So that's awesome to hear that in Florida they got play.
Yeah, that's how I got turned on to this.
Yeah.
And I read an article about him in Rolling Stone. So after when I saw them play, immediately, you know, once again, for me, there's, you know, Shaka Malik.
Yep.
I'm like, that could be me. You know? And after they finished their set, I went around to the side, and I just waved them down. And I'm like, hey, man, I just wanted to tell you, dude. I told him I just got out of prison and that I got turned on to their music when I was at work release, and it was cool to see them live, and this is my first show in 10 years, and this is fucking crazy. And he goes, wait a minute, stop. You just got out of prison after how long? I said, yeah, 9.5 years. He goes, this is your first show? I'm like, yeah, yeah. He goes, man, dude, come hang out with us today, man. Fuck that, you know. So for the rest of the day, I was hanging out with Orange 9mm, bouncing around from bus to bus. You know, they were introducing me to people, and everybody was showing me love, giving me brews. Hey, welcome home, man. So that was a real cool, very, very cool, a welcome home, you know.
An awesome story. That's an incredible story. I guess, did you kind of start going to shows immediately after that on the regular, or was it like, or were you restricted in what you could and couldn't do?
No. When I was released, it was cool. I was released expiration of sentence. So, I was just trying to be smart because, you know, as I said, I kind of ended up falling in with these young testosterone filled, you know, colorblind skins who love to love a good dust up, you know? So, I don't mind one, or yeah. I didn't mind them, but at the same time, it was probably better for me not to get caught up in that shit being fresh out of prison. So, you know, I would try to, because there were a few shows I went to where shit just jumped off. There was a little riot. There was a show where Sick of It All came down to Miami, and they played at this spot. And they had the wrong security for this event. The security there just obviously had never worked that kind of a show before. So they were already really tense. And when the moshing started and the pit got to going, you know, these guys weren't familiar with that and they didn't understand. And they were real physical, which is a recipe for disaster. And sure enough, a riot broke out and it was skins and punks united and strong, fighting the security and cops and, I was able to make it out of that one without getting arrested.
I guess that's the thing, is like there's a totally different set of consequences for you than all these other guys that you're hanging out with all these fights that they're getting into at these shows.
Yeah, yeah, and I understood it. I mean, you know, I used to be that kid, you know,
yeah,
but now
yeah.
at this point I'm 28, 29, fresh out of prison.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm in a deep deficit. I got to climb out of this hole.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are, well, you know, guys, a few of the guys probably had priors and had been in trouble. But for the most part, they were mostly young guys that hadn't been in any too serious
yeah.
trouble. So, you know, they could afford to get that screw up. You know, I had already used my uh-oh.
So at this point, you're obviously getting super into wrestling or starting to get into wrestling. Were there other people that you met in punk and hardcore that were also into wrestling at the time in Florida?
No, man. That's there were, you know, in the Florida wrestling scene, you know, there are lots of guys that were into, you know, rock, but I don't recall meeting anybody that was really into punk or hardcore specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it wasn't until me and CM Punk met on the indies that there was anybody that I could remember really, you know, connecting with over music. And if then I think I think he had pretty much the same reaction that you did when he and I started talking music. He was like, "Oh shit, you like that? Really? Oh shit."
Well, I think I'm definitely think it's also the fact that there's always this weird kind of connection that goes with punk and wrestling. Bizarrely, there's a lot of like, you know Robbie Brookside, right?
Sure, yeah.
You know,
he's one of my favorite people in the world. I know all about his amazing documentarian past.
Yeah, his punk rock heritage. And like, it's funny because, like, I'll go to Liverpool and I'll talk to, like, punk friends in Liverpool and I'll be like, "Do you know this guy, Robbie Brookside?" They're like, "Oh, that guy that wrestled?" And I'm like, "Yeah, he's kind of a legend. Like, he's actually considered
yeah.
one of the greatest wrestlers of all time." They're like, "Oh, no," like, they're just like, "Oh, he used to do shows, and he was, like, our friend," and, like, I'm like, yeah, he's also, you know, a legend now, and an icon to a lot of
yeah,
people.
Yeah, yeah, he's your favorite wrestler.
Yeah.
Respects Robbie Brookside.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. He's, like, the Black Flag of wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, which, you know what, it's funny, because I was talking about, you know, the punk attitude of wrestling that goes with it. I was in England a few months ago
mm-hmm.
wrestling for NWA Fight Nation. And afterwards, I was in a bar having a pint by myself. I met this lovely couple and two really cool people. And I had on this Bad Brains hoodie. And they complimented it, and they like Bad Brains. And we started talking, and one thing led to another. They find out I'm a professional wrestler, MVP. "Oh, I know who you are." You know, okay, so the conversation turns. And when I told them that I had quit WWE, that I had asked for my release so that I could go wrestle in Japan, his wife said something that I'd never considered until she said it, and it just made me smile from ear to ear like a little kid. She goes, "You quitting WWE to go to New Japan was punk as fuck."
Oh, yeah.
And I went, "Shit, you know what? Yeah, you're goddamn right it was."
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
I think I wanted to get into that later on, but I had the exact same kind of reaction to that. Like, that is to me like the ultimate anti sellout move. Like, that is following your dream and doing like, that's like, you know, choosing to stick with the indie label because
yeah,
that's what's the better fit for you. And like, and I think that's also another reason why, you know, I respect you is because you came out of this, you know, situation that, you know, if I were in, I'm sure it would break me and being in prison. And not only do you rebuild your life, but you follow your dreams and like to the fucking fullest, going to Japan and wrestle in Japan because you love Japanese wrestling after being at the height of your industry, which is like, you know, some full bucket list, foliage life dream living. But in the course of kind of getting into wrestling on the start of it, were you able to kind of still go to shows, or were you forced to kind of pick at this point to start training and going more down that path?
Well, yeah, because wrestling became an obsession. Mm-hmm. I drank it, I ate it, I slept it, you know. At this point, it seemed like the only time that I would, you know, I was still connected to the music when I would train, you know, in the gym or, you know, sometimes if I was in the wrestling school by myself, you know, because what great fucking music to train to.
Yeah.
But the weekends became my wrestling time. And I was usually on the road going out of town to some show or, you know, driving the proverbial 500 miles for a hot dog and a handshake. So, you know, now there were no time for shows. And shows started to become less and less until it got to the point where there was just virtually no shows at all.
Yeah. I know you worked as a bouncer for a while, I guess, while also doing wrestling training. Were you ever bouncing at shows, or was it always just like clubs?
No, never. When I first started the whole bouncing thing, it was funny. The reason I did that is because as a convicted felon, nobody would hire me for anything else. I couldn't get a job anywhere because I had to check that box. Have you ever been convicted of a felony? Mm-hmm. And, yes, so I couldn't be hired. So a few people said, hey, you know, you're a big guy. You can take care of yourself. You should try bouncing. And I got put on at a place here, a place there for like $65 a night or whatever. And then somebody suggested that I take my talents to South Beach. And one night I'm walking down South Beach, just going from club to club, asking if they're hiring. And I happened to pass by this one club. It was called The Living Room. And at that time, it was the most exclusive club on South Beach with the two obnoxious French doormen who pick and choose who gets in, the whole cattle call scene. And Kimbo Slice was working outside the door as the security. And I'm like, yo, man, you guys hiring? He's like, yeah, hold on a second. He goes, gets his dude, Eric. And I started working at The Living Room, and I was making $105 a night. I just got a quick $40 raise from the shithole I was working at.
Wow.
And you know, I had to wear a suit and tie, and all of a sudden, you know, at these clubs, you know, people are so rich, they're handing you tips. So I'd sometimes make a few hundred dollars in tips every night. There's guys just handing you money. Hey, buddy, here's $20. Hey, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And really did I have to break up a fight in those kind of clubs. And, you know, besides, you had dudes like me and Kimbo Slice walking around, you know, in a suit being very nice, reminding you to have a good time, you know.
Pretty hard to go back to bouncing a NoFX show after doing that. When you were though doing the wrestling and sort of like traveling around and stuff like that, were you ever getting an opportunity to see shows kind of like throughout the travels at all, or were you ever like, I guess it's at this point you kind of, as you say, you had to choose to kind of go full into wrestling as opposed to being into the music fan at all at this point, but were you still like, how were you still consuming music, or were you still able to consume music at all? Like, were you just buying magazines or the internet, I guess, at this point, right?
Yeah, I was going to say at this point, just, you know, shows just became at that point, really a thing of the past. I just didn't have time to go to any. It just, it usually was a matter of working. If I wasn't working at a wrestling show, I had to work so that I could support my wrestling habit.
Mm-hmm.
And the just shows didn't figure into that. So, yeah, my music news and goings on were whatever I got from the internet. And, you know, on the rare occasion that I ended up catching up with somebody who was, you know, on the scene, a buddy, oh, man, did you hear about so-and-so put out a new album? Oh, these two people had a great show recently. But, you know, I just kind of got a little alienated from the scene just because I was trying to accomplish something. I was still, you know, I still had the music with me because it's something I would always listen to when I was training. You know, I still had the music, but as far as actually being active on the scene, it just wasn't time for it.
So what were some of the bands that you kind of got into, I guess, right? Like, that's kind of like 1999 is sort of like the thick of my era too. So I guess, unfortunately, because of force of circumstance, you and me are kind of getting super into the stuff at the same time. What were some of your favorite bands around 99 or into the early 2000s that you were kind of like, they kind of spoke to you? Like Sick of It All, you mentioned, obviously, and Orange Nine Millimeter.
Well, yeah, it was cool because I kind of went, even though a lot of the newer bands that were out at that time, I was getting turned on to new stuff, but I was going very retro because for so long I wasn't able to listen to the stuff that I knew and that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were bands that I liked back then that had whole catalogs that I missed out on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for example, all of a sudden, here it is, way after they had come and gone, I'm listening to Burn on a regular basis because of Orange 9mm. Sick of It All was, you know, new to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had heard of them and I knew about them, but all of a sudden, you know, like, oh, shit, I like this. Who else was I listening to then that I really liked? See, man... Now you gotta be trying to remember shit, and I'm high.
Well, don't worry.
He's back into the memory bank for who I was grooving to. Oh, you know who I got turned on to at that time, and I'd never miss a chance to put these guys over because there was a group called Bionic Jive,
Mesa,
Arizona.
Oh,
and Emerge McVeigh and Akko Mack. They're rappers. But as far as the rock rap hybrid, and it's not punk or hardcore per se, but just in terms of the energy and the feeling, nobody, and my feelings, my personal opinion, does it better than these guys. It's the perfect hybrid, and if you ever get a chance, check out Bionic Jive. Just, man, I was really big into them because they were on, remember that farmclub.com?
Yeah, absolutely.
I saw them on there live and I was like, wow, these guys are awesome. And they never, you know, as you know, they never got the opportunity that they should have got. But then, you know, bands like Limp Bizkit went on to become fucking huge. And
that was like, the thing about farmclub.com. It was almost like a curse. It's like all the bands that were on there that you thought were going to get huge just didn't really get very popular.
Yeah, right. It seemed like that happened a few times. I'm like, oh, these guys are awesome.
Yeah.
What happened?
At the Drive-In was on there, I think, right? Was that the Drive-In? Or And You'll Know Us by the Trail of the Dead, I remember, definitely was on, and they smashed all their gear on stage.
Oh, shit.
And so,
I didn't see that one.
So when you got into WWE, and I guess, like, that schedule is obviously... Well, actually, when you get into developmental... Are you kind of like stationary at that point? Like, are you able to kind of like resume a somewhat normal life, or is it still really hard on the road?
No, you kind of can. Because you are stationary.
Yeah.
But you know, you're training 5 days a week, and you know, you're at the training facility at 7 a.m. every day, and you're taking hundreds of bumps a day, and just, you know, pretty much be at Deep South, the way we were doing things then. Mm-hmm. You've heard the stories and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of the day, you ain't going out. You're going back to your apartment. You're going to soak in the tub for a bit. You might have a few beers, and you're going to knock the hell out because you got to get up at 6 so you can be, you know, at the training center by 7. Generally, you had your weekends free. So I didn't really get into the scene there because we were in McDonough, which is about an hour outside of Atlanta. But there was one band, and I'm trying to remember the band now, man. It's going to piss me off because they were really good. And they were a black band, too. And they made some really cool music. And I can't remember the name of them now to save my life.
From Atlanta?
Yeah, they were in the Atlanta area. Oh,
from
man.
That period, too.
God, I can't remember. Yeah, let me. Hopefully it'll come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
The lead singer's name was Baye.
Baye, I'm trying to think who that might be. The Atlanta, it's amazing how much music comes out of that city. I guess it's a massive city, but like,
yeah.
And the diversity of the stuff that kind of comes out of that city, too. Well, when you, you know, do ultimately, you know, I guess I'm jumping around here, but I wanted to find out, when you go to Japan, did you ever get a chance to go to shows in Japan?
You know, I saw one show in Japan, and it was actually funny. The only reason I saw that show is because I was hanging out with Tokyo Hero.
Uh-huh.
And, it, God, man, I can't even, I want to say it was Anthrax. Yeah, it was Anthrax. And, this, the hybrid band that was, I think it was like the members from Pantera. And, oh man, I can't even remember.
Was
what?
Down?
Was it Down?
Or Super Joint Ritual?
Jeez, man. It sucks. I can't even remember who
no.
it was now.
Don't
but
worry.
That was the only show I went to. I didn't get to go to any shows in Japan because I was working pretty much. And it, oddly enough, you know, even though I had Tokyo Hero, who is plugged into, you know, the music scene there, we never went to any shows together, just the one. And, I thought it was cool as fuck seeing these Japanese kids. The music scene in Japan is so crazy. Have you been?
Oh yeah, well, I've been there 3 times, but like only for, you know, like a short time every time. But I love it, love it.
Did you get a chance to play? Were you there for a festival?
Yeah, we played. First time we played Astro Hall in Tokyo, and then the second time we played Fuji Rock, and then the third time we played
Fuji Rock. Okay.
Yeah, Hostess Weekender. Which is like just like a label festival with Dinosaur Jr. But
Dinosaur Jr.
Oh yeah, that Dinosaur Jr. is a band that we've gotten we toured a lot with, and actually another band that has real deep hardcore punk roots in Deep Wound, their old hardcore punk band from back in the day.
Okay,
but it's funny because like Japanese hardcore, like specifically like the style of Japanese hardcore called Burning Spirits, is almost like. As strong style Japanese wrestling is to North American Japanese wrestling fans or wrestling fans, period, I should say. It's the same way that Burning Spirit style hardcore is for me. Like, I love that style of music so much that comes from
Man,
Japan.
Man, I got it. As soon as we finish, I'm going to pull some up. I'm going to go find Burning Spirit style hardcore.
Yeah, it's like Judgment, Gizum, Gauze, but... they're just like, there's so many bands there, and it's, and once again, it's just like, it's very, I find a lot of similarities, obviously, in approach to, in the same way that, you know, Japanese wrestling has that kind of like sort of all consuming kind of a passion and approach to the craft. It's the same approach that's kind of applied to Burning Spirit style Japanese hardcore, where it's almost like every band is doing this perfect combination of Motorhead and Discharge and just perfect. Perfectly figured out. Actually, that I wanted to ask you also, given the recent passing of Lemmy, did you have any experiences meeting Lemmy when you were at the WWE?
Man, you know, I was, when I heard he died, I said how unfortunate it was that I've met every member of the band but Lemmy.
Really?
All the times through WWE, I never met Lemmy, not once. And that's a huge regret, man, because I was a huge Motorhead fan, man. I mean, I am a huge one. I love Motorhead.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I discovered Motorhead when they were on that episode of The Young Ones on MTV.
Yep, absolutely.
That was my introduction to Motorhead. And I'm like, wow, this is cool.
Well, actually, MTV was that. Did you ever see the Bad? Oh, was it MTV or no? Some other music show, right? The Bad Brains played Daytona Beach, or something.
You know, I didn't see it when it came out, but I've since seen it on YouTube and whatnot. Yeah, man. You know, when I finally got to see Bad Brains, it was after I had been released from prison, and me and my two younger brothers drove to Orlando to the House of Blues, and it was kind of bittersweet. It was awesome for me to finally see them, but they played most of the songs in a 4/4 time signature. Everything was like real slowed down, so it wasn't, you know, Bad Brains of old. And I guess I was still expecting HR to be bouncing off the walls, you know, but still I had the opportunity to see them live. And Shaka Malik, shout out to him, actually put in a call to Daryl and said, hey man, this dude, he's a friend of mine, he wants to meet you guys. So I got a chance to meet everybody and talk to him for a little bit. And you know, for me, that shit was just like couldn't even verbalize what
that's
it was
amazing
to meet my heroes as far as music was, because it was because of them that I started listening to punk and hardcore and embracing the scene. They were my doorway.
Yeah, well, and I was going to say, like, is that's before you kind of became famous for wrestling, right? Like, that would have been just
before. Yeah, I was just some guy, man.
I guess that's the thing. It's like, you know, you meet these bands and there's still, I don't know if it's like this in other genres, but there's still like this like sort of immediate kind of like connection. Like, here's this guy from this band that you liked calling your favorite band to get you backstage. It's like, I don't know. That's why I love this genre.
You know, like and that's something that's just so cool that I think is kind of unique to the scene. You know, there's this the culture of, and there's this real cool camaraderie and brotherhood, and it's like families fight, and you're gonna have your issues, but at the same time, there's just there's just the love, you know, and I dig it.
Well, at WWE, did you have a chance to meet any of the other bands? I guess, did Hatebreed ever do anything with WWE? I remember Jamie recorded a demo of a song that was going to be used, but it was never actually used.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not to my knowledge. I've never met them. I've never seen them. How's that? Every time they came to South Florida, I'd always hear about how awesome the fucking Hatebreed show was, but I had to work or I had to go out of town to wrestle. So to this day, I still haven't seen Hatebreed.
Really? Well, that's it must be. Is it now that you're kind of like, I guess you're about to jump back into sort of a more full-time-ish schedule, but like in the last couple of years, have you had a chance to see more stuff because you've had time off, or have you been unable to kind of see stuff?
Well, no, actually, It's only been recently that I've made like a conscious effort to say, hey, I'm gonna get out here in Houston and start seeing more local bands play.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, going to see concerts, you know, I haven't really seen a lot of hardcore shows lately, but on occasion, you know, when certain people come to town that I know, or like, it was real cool to be able to go see Living Color play, or when Fozzy came to town, I went and, you know, hung out with Jericho, and I got to see Slash's new project, the one that he's doing, because Fozzy opened up for them.
Mm-hmm.
Who else have I been to see lately? I saw Fishbone at Fitzgerald's maybe a little longer than a few months ago.
Have you ever had any interaction with Bob Mould from Husker Du? Because I know he's like, he used to write for WCW, and he's a big wrestling fan, and I'm sure is a fan of your work.
No. I don't think we've ever met, actually.
There's also, what about Lars from Rancid?
Yes. Now, Lars and I got to hang out. As a matter of fact, one day, once again, Lars is another guy. He and I were sitting in catering. We're, you know, shooting the shit about music, and Punk walks in, and Lars looks up and goes, this guy knows what's up. Punk goes, why do you think I fuck with him? but it's funny because that day Lars had on a white shirt and a red sweater, like a pullover V-neck sweater vest, and blue jeans and white sneakers. And I had on the same exact thing. And so somewhere, I don't have it anymore, but somewhere there exists a picture of me and Lars dressed like twins.
Twinsies.
Hey, real cool guys. I got to, again, hanging out with Tokyo Hero. I got to see Lars play with his band, the Old Firm Casuals.
Oh, yeah.
See them play. Yeah, that was a hell of a show. I enjoyed that.
Did you hang out with that band at all? My friend Casey plays in that band.
No, just that night.
Oh, okay,
I haven't
yeah.
seen him since.
But. Oh, crazy. Awesome. That's like a small world. That's actually, I'm supposed to have Casey on the podcast next week.
Well, give him my regards.
I will.
There was a hell of a show that night.
That's awesome. Yeah. Like, well, I know he's a huge fan. Like, that's the thing is, like, I meet so many. It's funny because, like, Robbie Brookside sent me a Performance Center shirt, and we went on this festival tour, and I was wearing it, and it would be like every day. It would be like casting bait into the water, and it would be like the lead singer of Exodus coming up being like, I fucking love wrestling. That's an amazing shirt. And like,
oh.
You know, or just like, it's amazing how many people in music kind of gravitate to wrestling as their chosen form of entertainment.
Lots of people do, man. It's funny. I met Alex from the Gaslight Anthem,
mm-hmm.
and it was pretty cool to have. We met, we got to hit it off. He's a huge wrestling fan, and a couple of the bandmates are wrestling fans. And they're like, "Yo, you guys!" He's like, "Hey, you want to? We're playing Coachella. You want to come hang out?" I'm like, "Yeah, all right, cool. Yeah, I'll come hang out at Coachella. I'll come hang out in your tour bus and go to Coachella. Sure. Yeah, I'll stand on the stage and watch you guys play. Yeah, sure. Yeah."
That's
yeah.
the only way to go to Coachella is when you have a backstage pass.
Dude, I wouldn't. Yeah, after that, I wouldn't go any other way.
Never again. It's going to be a letdown every other time.
Yeah, I wouldn't go any other way now. I was like, oh, okay, cool, man. This is a yeah. When I saw Steely Dan played Coachella, I was like, really? That okay? Coachella's really getting adventurous now.
Well,
and it was crazy because when I went, Wu-Tang was on one stage and the Red Hot Chili Peppers were on the other.
Yeah.
You know, talk about life choice.
Yeah, what was your choice? I was going to say, what did you make? What was your decision?
Oh, man, I straddled the fence. I kind of hung out in the middle.
You got to hear the mashup that of 36 Chambers and Mother's Milk that none of us
yes, heard. Yes.
it's funny. When we play Coachella, I saw Throbbing Gristle play, and I was standing beside Boone from Lost.
Nice.
It was like a very surreal moment. But that's my same thing. I'm never going to go back again. They're probably never going to ask us to play again. And so it's like, I can't go back. I can't go back to ever and be in the.
But you know people, though. You know people. You're kind of a big deal.
Oh, well, you know, it's not the same. I'm not going to be able to see Throbbing Gristle or see that mashup of 36 Chambers, Mother Milk that I want. So
no,
what's
probably
the point?
Not.
I won't keep you much longer because I could honestly, as you can tell, and I hope I've done a pretty good job, I was about to go down a wrestling rabbit hole so many times, and I could just talk to you about wrestling so much, but I wanted to kind of allow you to just talk about music. But I can't not talk to you a little bit about wrestling, right? So I gotta,
of course. Okay. Yeah, of course. No, man, it's, it's funny, man. Wrestling... It's my craft,
mm-hmm.
my passion, and you know I say this about professional wrestling. You know, I love the craft. I hate the business.
Yeah,
you know, I hate the business of professional wrestling. But you know, as speaking to a fellow performer, I love performing in mm-hmm. front of the crowd and eliciting certain responses and reactions. And you know the same how you know you control the crowd. You know, you're the maestro and. You know, the crowd is following your every lead, and it's just an awesome thing to be able to go out there and affect people emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. But, you know, the business part of pro wrestling, man, it's just, you know, in sliminess and snakes and insecure people. And it's just like, oh, wow. You see all these big, jacked up, tough guys, and you think, wow, and it's the biggest collection of sissies in the world.
Well, that's like music. Like what you're describing is exactly like music in the same way that, like, it's like you can love music, but hate that music business with a passion.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I keep going back to the similarities and stuff like that, but I do see kind of the same way. And maybe that's why because you're just like, you are that punk rock vibe, you know, and that's why you have to hate the business of the wrestling side, because you're the punk rock side of wrestling, you know, you gravitate to the art, not to the business.
Yeah, 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 man. And listen, man, I still own a pair of purple Docs, you know. I got two pairs. I got black and purple. And yes, I will put on my fucking purple Docs and go to a show. And then, as a matter of fact, I need to. Just you have inspired me. Coming on this podcast, I'm going to check out the local Houston scene, and I'm going to take my old carcass out to a show, strap on the purple Docs, and do a couple revolutions, and then get a beer and ice up.
Houston was the first place I ever saw anyone standing on the side of the pit sipping lean in the middle of a hardcore show, and it was
that's fucking beautiful. See, man.
So your purple Docs would go with the drinks.
My purple Docs with some purple lean. But yeah. If I sip on some purple lean, I am not getting in the pit. I will just be like that dude, leaning my ass on the wall somewhere.
I'll tell you one thing: he was not chill when someone spilt that cup.
I bet not. That's probably a couple $100 in that cup. You know?
It was a cheaper time, but yeah, it was definitely still a pretty expensive drink, I imagine. But anyway, I could talk to you again all day, but I think this is a great point to let you go. I'd love to have you back on for a part two at some point, but
anytime, man. I had a blast, man. And next time I'll try not to be so high so I can remember things a little bit better.
No, I think it was amazing. No, you were perfect. Like, this is, as I said, this has been, you know, like you to me.
I've been hit in the head with a chair one or two times.
Well,
so
I've hit myself, unfortunately, trying to emulate you with a can in my head in a weird way, one too many times. So it's affected my memory recall as well. But I think that's the thing, is like, you know, you're someone that embodies like so many of my the things I love in life, which is politics, which you didn't get a chance to talk to, but obviously you're an incredibly insightful person on that stuff and go on to it on your own show all the time. But also like wrestling and punk, you know, like you combine these three passions of mine. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for coming on the show and sharing it.
Anytime, man. I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Awesome. Talk to you soon. All right, MVP, one more story, because you and me were talking about this story before, and I just got to hear it, so everyone's got to hear it.
All right, so Fugazi comes to town.
Yeah.
I've never seen Minor Threat, but I'm thinking Ian McKay. All right, cool, man. You know this. Let me go check out Fugazi. At this point, to be honest, I hadn't even heard Fugazi. I think I'd heard one or two songs. Didn't really know him, but fuck it, it's Ian McKay. Let's go check him out. My younger brother, who's about 3 inches taller than I am and a state champion amateur wrestler, he comes out. I turn my brother onto the scene. You know, he's not as into the scene, but, you know, he likes what he likes, and, you know, he's not scared of the pit, or, yeah, you know, back then. And we go to the show. Once we get inside, we realize, oh, this isn't what we thought it was going to be. This Fugazi's a little different from Minor Threat. Okay. All right, no problem. So there were still a couple of guys that we recognized, you know, from the little colorblind scene, and a couple of little skins were hanging out, and they kind of half-assed started moshing. And at this time, man, I want to say I was juiced up then. You know, I was probably about 260 pounds,
yeah,
jacked. And like I said, my brother was a cop and an athlete, and he was no less than 240. And Ian McKay stops the show and, you know, tells everyone who's moshing, you know, to have some respect for the other kids that don't want to be, you know, banged around. And, you know, he goes into one of his little speeches, his little morality plays, and they start playing again. And the handful of people that are moshing start moshing again. I never did anything. I'm just standing there on the edge, just keeping an eye on my brother and kind of, you know, digging the music a little bit. Next thing I know, he stops the show again. Security comes and surrounds me and my brother. And they grab my brother, who he was a cop, so you know he had that holier than thou thing. Anyway, then get your hands off me kind of thing. He ends up with a bloody nose, and I'm telling him, man, chill the fuck out. We'll talk when we get outside. This is obviously a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
We get outside. Security goes back in. And we're like, wait a minute, what the fuck just happened? I run security at one of the biggest nightclubs on Southeast. My brother's a cop. We just got thrown out, and everybody went back inside. Nobody's telling us shit. My brother identifies himself to the two Fort Lauderdale cops and says, look, man, I'm a cop in Miami. I'm standing here with a bloody nose. I don't even know what the fuck we got thrown out for. What's going on? So the cops are like, well, you know, they let somebody know, hey, listen, you didn't just throw out two jabronis. You got some guys out here that, you know, one of them's a cop. After waiting for like 45 minutes, them hoping we would go away, head of security comes out, and he says that we were thrown out for fighting. So my brother and I look at each other, and I said, well, where are the bodies? Because if me and this dude were fighting somebody, you'd have to back up some ambulances to haul some carcasses out of here. Who were we fighting? Each other? Why? We were the only ones that got thrown out, so who were we fighting? And he said that, well, we were asked to remove the two of you because you two were causing a problem. Wait a minute. Well, I didn't do anything. I'm standing there on the edge of the pit, not doing anything. My brother, he's just kind of bouncing around. So why is it that the two big black guys, the only black guys at the show, mm-hmm. on the floor, when he stops the show, we get surrounded and escorted out. And traditionally in the past, Ian would, I heard he would give people their money back when he would kick them out of the show. We got kicked out of the show for doing nothing wrong, and we never got our money back. So fuck you, Ian McKay. And if somebody hears this, you tell them I said it. Fuck you. Fugazi fucking sucks. And I had a horrible time at your show, didn't do anything wrong, and you owe me $40 or $30 or whatever those fucking shitty tickets were anyway.
Well, to bring it full circle, next time, if we're ever asked to play Coachella again, we're bringing you, and he's at Coachella every year at the backstage area, so we're going to make sure you get your money back for that show. For
yeah. So. Give me my... And let me say this, though, and I want to be very careful not to imply at all that Ian McKay is a racist or anything like that. You know, I just thought it was real fucked up that there was a handful of white guys that were marching, too, but only the black guys got thrown out, and we were told that we were specifically pointed out. And it was his show. His name's at the top of the bill.
Yeah.
So, bam, that shit falls on you, Ian. I want my money back, man. $2. I want my $2.
We know he's at Coachella every year, so it's Action Bronson, myself, or someone out there who's a wrestling sympathizer musician will make sure you get your $2, more than $2 at that point for a Fugazi show, let's be honest, back.
Okay. Thank you for letting me vent.